Chapter 1, The Four Conferences. Over the 5 years between 2014 and 2018, four conferences were held at three venues in Africa, organized by two institutions. From the delegates' deliberation, this book now emerges as the vehicle for pulling together the themes discussed during the deliberations of the conference delegates. It is not without significance that this book is written at the time of the COVID-19 virus pandemic. This worldwide disaster has presented the kleptocratically inclined corrupt leaders and business people with a rare opportunity to loot relief funding, the financing for restarting the world economy, and the vulnerable public purse. The pandemic has also curtailed the usual activities of both institutes. The Konrad Adenauer Foundation organizes over 2,500 conferences per year, and the Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa, or Accountability Now, has to observe a fierce and protracted lockdown in South Africa that has endured endlessly. The dislocation caused by the pandemic presents a golden opportunity for reflecting and repurposing. The Chinese word for crisis is a combination of danger and opportunity. Both are in plentiful supply as the world grapples with the lethal virus and the spread of the pandemic it has caused. The oft-quoted statement that we must never waste a good crisis is generally attributed to Rahm Emanuel, President Barack Obama's chief of staff, in response to the Wall Street meltdown of 2008, the world's previous big crisis. Many have made the same point, and in fact, the words can be traced back at least to Niccolo Machiavelli, the Italian Renaissance diplomat who died in 1547. He wrote, "Never waste the opportunity offered by a good crisis." Machiavelli understood that crises shake people out of their complacency, create opportunities to challenge conventional wisdom, and give leaders some room to take on vested interests to achieve transformative change. It is accordingly not surprising that the expression "never waste a good crisis" was also used by Sir Winston Churchill as he led Great Britain, as the United Kingdom was then known, to the victory of the Allied forces in World War II. Inevitably, those who would find such opportunities for change most threatening, those with vested interests in the current arrangements, will downplay the crises. "What crisis?" they will say, or portray them as inevitable and beyond our capacity to manage or prevent. The low-intensity but long-standing crises attributable to the spread of corrupt activities perpetrated worldwide with impunity are the fundamental reason behind the convening of the four conferences, all of which had themes relating to the topic of corruption. The United Nations is alive to the effect of corruption on sustainable development in the world. In 2015, it devised and adopted the Sustainable Development Goals, deliverable by 2030, and aimed at, among other things, ending poverty, hunger, and inequality. Sustainable Development Goal number 16 calls for strong governance institutions. This book sets out to encourage action in those who are complacent about the harm that corruption does in the world, and to the prospects of achieving the SDGs either timelessly or at all. The intention is to treat the problems corruption poses as a threat to order in the world that requires a united and cohesive response if the UN SDGs, especially number 16, strong governance institutions, are to be scored timelessly in open play rather than from the penalty spot in extra time. The first conference was held in Entebbe at the Serena Hotel in July 2014. Its title was Stakeholders Conference on Budgetary Controls, Corruption and Human Rights in Africa. The emphasis of the conference was on the prevention and correction of corrupt activities through control measures designed to nip wrongdoing in the bud, an easier task than the unraveling of corruption in complex criminal proceedings in which the lawyers of the corrupt are all too often able to outgun or outwit the prosecutors set the task of securing a conviction from a court which, very properly, requires proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Some tentative recommendations emerged at the end of the proceedings in Entebbe. For society as a whole, peace that is secure, progress that is sustainable, and prosperity that is shared. For the judiciary, integrity that is unquestionable, independence that is guaranteed, and impartiality that informs all decision-making. For the anti-corruption entities of Africa, there were five criteria. Specialization that involves the dedicated pursuit of the corrupt to the exclusion of all else. Training that equips personnel with the skills necessary to outwit and outgun the corrupt. Independence in structure and operation that empowers functioning without fear, favor, or prejudice, free of political interference, executive control, and other interference by the powerful. Resourcing that is guaranteed and adequate to the tasks at hand. And lastly, security of tenure of office that entrenches stability and efficacy. The second conference, held in Cape Town in November 2015 at the President Hotel, was called Stakeholders Conference on Combating Corruption in Africa. At the end of the conference, a more detailed and self-explanatory resolution was passed. The resolution reinforced the recommendations of the first conference in Entebbe and made concrete suggestions for improved strategies for containing corruption. The third conference, called Stakeholders Conference on Activism Against Corruption, which focused on that activism, was held at Birchwoods in Boksburg, near Johannesburg, in November 2016. It too ended in an even more detailed resolution, which is Appendix 2 to the written version of the book. With this amount of material from the first three conferences at its disposal, the second meeting in Entebbe in October 2018 was dubbed a workshop rather than a conference, and the delegates were put to work on the five themes of its title. Workshop on African Legal Frameworks for Preventing, Combating, Investigating, Prosecuting, and Punishing the Corrupt. The resolutions taken at the end of that workshop reflect the work done and are Appendix 3 to the book. The main aim of writing this book is to pull together the common themes which emerged from the deliberations of the conference goers in a digestible format. This step will hopefully make the work done more easily accessible and available to a wider audience of those concerned about the scourge of corruption in African countries as well as elsewhere in the world. Not all of the conferences were attended by the same delegates. This enabled those who attended the later gatherings to elaborate on and refine the resolutions of their predecessors. Advocacy of anti-corruption efforts is an inexact science and a hard row to hoe. Without the creation of the necessary political will to counter corruption, there is little prospect of the culture of impunity for corrupt activities coming to an end or even being curtailed. As the FACTI panel, appointed to guide the United Nations deliberations on corruption, has stated, technical feasibility and political viability are central. Turkeys, who are kleptocrats, do not vote for Christmas. For these reasons, it is important that as wide an audience as possible is alive to the dangers posed by corruption and is aware of the various strategies open to those who have endured enough. That is enough of the abuse of public office for private gain. Enough of the theft of public funds intended for the alleviation of the plight of the poor. As Justice Navi Pillay has tellingly observed in her role at the United Nations Human Rights Commission. Make no mistake about it, corruption is a killer. For the benefit of listeners, I will now read the resolution taken at the second Entebbe conference because it encapsulates the work of all the conferences held up to that time. It is headed Workshop Resolutions on the African Legal Frameworks for Preventing, Combating, Investigating, Prosecuting and Punishing the Corrupt. A. Noted the resolution taken at the Pan-African Conference on Combating Corruption held at Cape Town on the 5th of November 2015. B. Further noted the Boksburg Declaration of 24th November 2016. C. Identified the ongoing lack of political will to tackle grand corruption adequately in Africa and elsewhere on the planet. D. Acknowledged the increasingly international character of grand corruption. E. Acknowledged the serious and debilitating impact on ordinary people of petty corruption. F. Recognized that adequately independent, effective anti-corruption machinery of state, that is STIRS criteria compliant, as set out in paragraph 5 of the Cape Town Declaration, is the primary tool in the combating of corruption. G. Stressed that a legislative and regulatory framework that embodies regional and international best practice is vital to the successful combating of corruption. H. Noted that it is in the effective and efficient implementation of laws designed to combat corruption that there is the greatest deficit, even in countries which have state-of-the-art legislative and regulatory regimes. I. Reaffirmed the substance of the work done in Cape Town and Boksburg. Further, the delegates J. reaffirmed the principle that adherence to the rule of law as the best way to balance the need for sustainable development and the protection of fundamental human rights. K. reaffirmed the important role of a national constitution as a social contract entrenching the national values of integrity, orientation against the corrupt, and the independence of constitutional institutions. L. strongly encouraged the promotion of a culture of integrity that makes corruption inimical to the values of the nation through sustained formal and civic education. M. strongly recommended, given the complex nature of corruption and its causes, the adoption of multidisciplinary approaches and strategies to understand and respond to this scourge. N. called for coherent legal frameworks, strong and independent institutions adequately equipped to hold everyone to account. Therefore, the delegates resolved, 1. That all political parties should affirm their commitment to the fight against corruption by including such commitment in their manifestos and constitutions and in their actions. 2. that governments of our countries adopt and implement a coherent national anti-corruption strategy to give effect to their legislative and policy obligations and responsibilities. As far as is possible, we recommend that governments harmonize their domestic legislation for internal coherence and harmonize their practices with the best practices of the region. 3. That procurement processes should be open and transparent at all levels, and action should be taken against all parties found in violation. Any disqualification from the tendering process for reasons related to actual or attempted bribery or related corrupt practices must lead to disqualification from further contracting with government at all level. 4. That the legal framework must ensure that anti-corruption entities adhere to the following criteria. A. That they are specialized and focused on combating corruption. B. That they have properly trained personnel. C. That they are legally, structurally, and operationally independent. D. That they be adequately resourced. As a guideline, we recommend setting aside a minimum of 0.3% of the national budget, and E, that the members of the entity have secure tenure of office. 4.1. Notwithstanding the appointment by the executive, we insist that structural and operational autonomy of the national anti-corruption entity must be guaranteed. 4.2. Furthermore, we demand that the entity must be safeguarded in law and in practice from political interference and influence. 5. That specialized anti-corruption courts should be established and operationalized in each jurisdiction that are appropriately staffed by dedicated and qualified personnel. 6. That the following operating principles for investigations of corruption should be adopted. A. All complaints of corruption must be investigated, and B. Where there is the decision not to prosecute, an automatic review would lie to an oversight body comprising members with appropriate financial, legal, and other skills drawn from multiple stakeholders to which the prosecuting authority must justify its decision not to prosecute. 7. That countries should adopt minimum sentences to serve both as a guide to sentencing authorities and as a deterrent to those seeking to engage in corrupt activity. 8. That action must be taken against both corruptor and corruptee, given the transactional nature of corruption. Upon successful prosecution, the names of private persons and public officers and companies should be entered into a publicly available national corruption register. 9. That the sanction against those found culpable should be appropriate and commensurate to the nature and seriousness of the offence, and should include, but not be limited to, A. long-term custodial sentences, B. the forfeiture to the state of the proceeds of corrupt acts, C. restrictions on standing for public office, D. restrictions on doing business with the state ever again, and E. publication in a national corruption register that is publicly available. 10. That governments should augment and strengthen the protections for whistleblowers and anti-corruption human rights defenders in order to reinforce a culture of accountability. 11. That governments should take steps at national level to emulate the sanctions system implemented by the World Bank, as referred to in Cape Town Conference of 2015 Resolution F. In the case of slow or delayed uptake of this recommendation, we propose to lobby for the amendment of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption to include those measures. 12. that membership of and access to the benefits of international and regional organizations such as the United Nations, the African Union, the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, BRICS, and the World Bank should be contingent upon the creation and implementation of a national anti-corruption environment in all countries that is fully compliant with this resolution and the content of the resolutions of previous conferences held. 13, that establishment of an international anti-corruption court compliant with the principle of complementarity should be considered as an alternative to end the culture of impunity for malfeasance that amounts to grand corruption, state capture. 14, that membership of and access to the benefits of the organizations mentioned above should be made dependent upon membership of the International Anti-Corruption Court, whether or not its complementary jurisdiction is in fact exercised in any given country and without derogation from the thrust of the Cape Town Conference Resolution Number E. This resolution was adopted on the 19th of October 2018 in Entebbe, Uganda, at the end of the fourth conference.